Coming up on Golf Today, headliner Dallas native three-time major champ Jordan Spieth meets the media at the CJ Cup. Byron Nelson, can he win this week and can he complete the career Grand Slam later this month? And as Bandon Dunes celebrates a quarter century, the man behind the magic, Mike Kaiser, stops by to reflect on his masterpiece of American golf. He called it Dream Golf. It's coming up on Golf Today.
Golf Today.
CJ Cup, Byron Nelson is the 20th event of the PGA Tour season being played at TPC Craig Ranch in McKinney, Texas, outside of Dallas. Coverage begins tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern Time right here on Golf Channel. This is Golf Today. Damon Hack alongside Ryan Lafferty. Great to be with you again. Also been paid attention to the television set, the big cat, omnipresent the last couple of days.
Hey, we were joking before the show. When's the last time that Tiger Woods did a media tour? Hello World?
Yeah.
I mean, essentially more than 25 years ago. I will say it was great to see him moving around. He said he was extremely sore after the last place finish at the Masters, but he certainly seemed to be in good spirits as he was hawking some product. And now he can go back to the cold plunge, go back to his PGA Championship prep, but it was good to see him up
no doubt. Back. Today is the official day, the launch day of Sunday Red, Tiger's collaboration with TaylorMade. Earlier today, Tiger Woods made a stop on the Today Show.
You had said at the beginning of the year the idea was to play kind of a tournament a month. That, I think, at the
Masters. Yeah.
That, I don't know, is that timeline still? Doesn't seem like it's quite working out. Are you readjusting?
I have basically the next 3 months. So I have three majors, and hopefully, you know, that'll all kind of work out.
How do you feel physically? How'd you feel after Augusta?
I was sore.
What do you do? Cold punch? Stretch? All of it?
Cold punch every day.
All of it?
Every day. Religiously.
For those who are watching the Today Show, I want you to, we have Sunday Red, your clothing line. Mm-hmm. We all know you wore red on Sundays. And you crush the competition. People can wear this stuff and feel like they're tapping into your energy of a Sunday Red. But tell people why you wear red, because this is a win for moms everywhere, and there's a lot of moms watching.
I wear red. My mom thought that being born a Capricorn, that red was my power color. And so in some of the junior golf events in SoCal, I would wear red, and I won. Okay, so in spite, I wore blue. At other tournaments,
in spite,
I didn't win, and so I then switched to red, and I had a lot more success wearing red. So I then saved it for okay, mom, I'll make you deal with you that I'll wear red on big events,
right?
On the last round of big events, because I can't wear it every single day.
Of course,
at you know, at Southern College Junior Golf, they're playing every day,
all the time.
So I can't do it. I'll wear it on the last day of big events. She said, fine, just wore it last day, and I did. End up wearing it.
I love that. I don't think a lot of people know why you wear red. Yeah. There's a nice
it's
little
mom.
Tie to mom.
Yeah, my mommy.
Sunday Red. I mean, so tell everybody about the logo.
The logo is a tiger. It's a simple thing. Yeah. It's nice and clean, but there's some representation of what I have done in my career. If you look at the stripes, there's 15 stripes, and as you alluded to earlier, I've won 15 major championships.
Right.
So
what happens if you win up a hall in 2 weeks?
That's my goal is to ruin the logo.
Yeah, you want to just keep
exactly.
Adding
I want to keep ruining
like
the logo.
Like a dinosaur.
The trademark
years.
Is here is this, and my job is to ruin it.
Tiger Woods, Capricorn, Billy Ray Valentine, Capricorn, LeBron James as well. How about Tiger? And the Carson kind of picked up on the once a month comment that he made back in December. That he would potentially best case scenario play once a month. We haven't seen it. What are his prospects for the rest of 2024?
Yeah, that's kind of where my mind went on this one as well, just kind of sifting through sort of the product hawking there. And he mentioned the once-a-month cadence, which has already been derailed.
Yes.
Of course, with March, he did not play either the Arnold Palmer Invitational or the Players' Championship. Just said his body and his game was not quite ready. I guess if you're optimistic, he said he's still on track for the remaining three major championships this year. He has such an interesting challenge, though, Damon, where it's not just trying to get his game up to where he can compete with a Scottie Scheffler or a Rory McIlroy. He's got to get his body in the starting line as well. He's got 13 days to do that.
Yeah, to me, it's those twin things that he's battling. It's the best players in the modern game. It's Scottie Scheffler, who appears to be a dominant, perhaps long-term dominant number one player in the world. It's youngsters like Seth Tagala, you know, coming out of the woodwork more and more comfortable on big stages on Sundays on the PGA Tour and at major championships as well. It's Ludvig Åberg. It's these players that are half his age and even less than that in some cases. And not only can he compete, you know, can he walk and be healthy for 72 holes on these difficult, meaty golf courses around the world?
It's the foundational aspect of competitive golf, of just walking 72 holes, which is still so difficult for him. I was struck by something that he said though at Augusta National. A reporter asked him during his Tuesday press conference, like, you know, why are you still doing this, essentially? Yeah. He said, I still think I can win. Until Tiger Woods get to the point, and we do have a large enough sample size now to know that it is going to be very hard to do this Hogan-esque schedule and still compete against the world's best players. But until he gets to that point where he's showing up and 45th is the best he thinks he can do, he's going to continue to try.
That stubbornness, of course, has made him a 15-time major champ. Right now, I'm going to focus on one of the Tiger babies. Flashback to 2010, the edition of the CJ Cup at Byron Nelson. Do you remember Jordan Spieth? He was 16 years of age, made his PGA Tour debut in his hometown, a Dallas high school kid, made the cut and entered the final round in contention, ultimately finished in a tie for 16th place. Had the galleries absolutely roaring that week in Dallas. I think his 12th start in this event this week. He's made the cut 10 times, a couple of top 10 finishes, was second in 2022, finished one shot back of the winner, K.H. Lee. At number 20 in the official World Golf ranking, the Dallas native is the highest ranked player in the field. With more, he joins Rex Hopper.
Joined by Jordan Spieth. Jordan, this is your 12th start in this event. What are the unique challenges and maybe advantages of the home game?
I think, like, you know, certain years I've just thought, man, it would be so cool to win a hometown event and maybe just add a little bit of pressure to it. But at the same time, you also get, on the flip side, you get the extra support and sleep in my own bed, really go through a pretty normal home week, and then you just come out here and walk four rounds. Yeah, that's probably, you know, I think it's just kind of trying to have fun with it, you know, trying to say, like, you know, if I'm playing my game, I'll have a chance to win and not trying to force it because I'm here. But at the same time, just, you know, embrace that, you know, I've got friends and family that want to come out and watch.
Did you maybe put a little bit extra pressure on yourself early in your career that maybe you've learned not to now?
I'm not sure. You know, we've bounced around different golf courses, and it's been different points in my career, too. I think, you know, after playing well in high school, I think maybe my first few years on tour, I was like, man, I ought to win this one. But at the same time, like, it's not like it's that easy. It's not like it's just a mindset and you just end up winning. So, you know, it had to do with, you know, how I never really played Las Colinas extremely well for whatever reasons. And I've actually had a better track record here at Craig Ranch than either of the previous two courses. So some of it just has to do with, you know, matchups of courses for your game and whatnot. So hopefully I can continue a pretty good trend I've had the few times it's been here.
A couple of weeks ago when I spoke to you in San Antonio, you said you were struggling a little bit separating the process from the result. Has that gotten better?
You know, I think, you know, I missed the cut at the Masters, which is just a, you know, a big time bummer. I always obviously look forward to that event. But it's like, it's been weird, you know. I haven't felt like it's as far off as some of the results I've had, and I don't feel like I need to have them, because I think if I'm feeling like I'm hitting shots the way I want to and my game's getting better and better, then I know what it can produce if I'm patient with it. So I'm just trying to be patient with it. I've got a heavy stretch of golf coming up, and I don't need to try to force anything. I just keep saying that, but just, you know, find a target, try and hit your target, then go on to the next shot, and then try and do it again. Just be really present and just try to get better each day. If I do that, then your mind's not on comparing results or results to process or anything like that.
You talked about how busy the next few weeks are going to be. What do you want to see out of your game this week, maybe going into Wells and then the PGA after that?
Well, and just some of the stuff that I've been a little limited with, kind of some of my wrist stuff, I've decided to just push it and just say, you know, if it's going to hurt, then I'm not going to be able to play. But if it's, I need to push it to a level where it needs to have more stress on it, and it's handling it really well the last few days, and the results have been a lot better. And so I'm looking forward to continuing to, you know, fully trust it and just seeing, you know, seeing a lot of tighter scoring clubs. That's been kind of what's hurt me, and it's really been just in some of the mechanics of what I've kind of been a little bit limited to. and I'm just trying to get out of that and really push it. And so I think just the short answer is just trusting what I've been doing the last few days through the week, and then that trust will build up if I'm doing it during the tournament rounds. Thanks.
You know, Jordan's chase for a career Grand Slam doesn't quite meet the scrutiny that Rory McIlroy gets every year, but the three-time major champ only needs the PGA to complete the career Grand Slam. His majors coming, of course, in 2015 at the Masters and the U.S. Open and the 2017 Open Championship as well. And worth taking a look at the odds, I think, for the PGA Championship. Heads to Valhalla in a couple of weeks, early check. There it is. Look at that. Scottie Scheffler plus
3.5 to 1 favorite.
I mean, why not?
Tiger-esque numbers, and we've seen nothing that would disprove that.
That, and you got Rory at 9 to 1, John Rahm 10 to 1, the defending champ Brooks Koepka 16. Look at Max Homa all the way at 30 to 1. There you see Jordan 25 to 1 to complete the career Grand Slam and get the job done at Valhalla. You have a bold prediction. We're getting closer and closer to the PGA Championship. Go on the limb, Ryan Lavner. Live dangerously.
I feel like going out on a limb on this point would be like Scottie Scheffler not winning
the
golf tournament. That might feel bold, but I'll go. If Scottie does not win, at Valhalla, I could actually see Bryson DeChambeau winning at Valhalla for his second major championship. And if you look at the PGA Championship over the past couple years since the move to May in 2019, this has become a brutish major championship. Mm. 9 under par. Or worse has been the winning score since the move to May. To me, that really fits Bryson's smash mouth style of golf. I think the Masters and how Bryson played at Augusta National should give him a ton of confidence. He remains a preeminent driver of the golf ball. He has these new bulged irons.
3D, baby.
That he now has had at least a month now to sort of bed in those changes. He remains a very underrated short game player and putter. I could see this setting up very well for him, particularly if it's going to be somewhere in that 6 to 9 under par winning score that we've seen over the past couple years.
Mike Shy, his longtime coach, I talked to him during the Masters tournament after Bryson had that great opening round. He said he was telling friends that he believed Bryson would win the Masters, and if not the Masters, a major at some point this year.
And if not this year, then next year.
Shoot. Just keep the door open. Well, it's interesting. You say it's become the brutish major championship. I want to say it's become the Justin Thomas major championship. And that's my bold prediction, that JT gets the job done and adds a third PGA, this one in his backyard. He's from Kentucky. And you might say, Justin Thomas, and I received some heat on social media.
You don't like getting added.
They call it the platform X. You might be aware of it. When I said, you know, Rory and the likes of Justin Thomas really have to raise their level to kind of compete with Scottie Scheffler. And people were saying, Justin Thomas, what has he done? He's won 15 times on the PGA Tour. He has two PGAs. He's been number one. He's won a Players. Shot 59 on the PGA Tour. Shot 63 in the U.S. Open. Has played in 3 Ryder Cups and 3 President's Cups. And he's coming off tied for 5th, by the way, with 4 rounds in the 60s at the RBC Heritage. So I know he hasn't been the Justin Thomas we're accustomed to seeing, but I think he's getting better and better. The misses are getting smaller and smaller, and I would not be shocked at all to see JT with a third Wanamaker trophy. You heard it here first, Ryan Lavner.
It seems very in vogue right now to sleep on Justin Thomas's career. And you look at the player equity program that was just released and sort of the shares. Like, JT was third on that list in terms of the payout that he's going to receive, looking at the totality of his career, not just the 15 PGA Tour victories, not just the 2 major championships, but the players, the number one. He had 27 prominent, what the PGA Tour is calling prominent, victories. The dude is a phenomenal, a generational talent, right on par with his good buddy Jordan Spieth's career. I'm with you. Over the past couple years, yes, it has not been the JT that we saw in 2016, 2017, 2018, but he is more than capable. Before this little rough patch that he's had over the past couple months, parting with Bones McKay as well, he was leader in strokes gained total over the previous six-month period. So he has played some good golf. The results haven't quite been there of late. I'm still bullish on Justin Thomas's long-term prospects.
I think he plays with a lot of pizzazz as well, a lot of riz, as the kids might say. Do you agree?
Definitely not mid.
Not mid. This show is not mid either. Coming up next, we're celebrating 25 years of Band and Dudes. We've been doing it all week long, and another great guest about to join us, the man whose vision became reality, Mike Kaiser, joins the program coming up.
Welcome back into Golf Today. 1999 Band and Dudes
open along the Oregon coastline to rave reviews. Bandon Dunes is true to the spirit of Scotland's ancient links and continues to be a bucket list destination for so many golf fans.
And Ryan, you know the history of Bandon really starts with Mike Kaiser. Over the years, he played many of the world's best courses, most of which were private, became committed to the principle that every golfer should have the opportunity to play great courses. It was then that he decided to build his own vision of what golf should be. He discovered the ideal property in the sand dunes near Bandon, Oregon. We are honored to be joined now by Mike Kaiser. Mike, it's great to see you. I want to go back to the 1990s. What were your motivations to bring Lynx Golf to this remote part of the world, to bring this vision to life?
I thought because people were going to Dornoch, which is as remote as Bandon Dunes, for decades and decades, Ballybunion, the same thing in Ireland. Because of those two golf courses in particular being as crowded and popular as they were, I thought something similar to Dornoch in America would be good, and was amazed that we found this 1,200-acre site right on the ocean in Bandon, Oregon. Remote, yes, but a great site also, yes.
And Mike, on that point, what stood out about this particular parcel of land along the Oregon coastline that really stood out to you?
The beautiful dunes, which are pretty much shrouded in gorse when I got here. You could make out the general shapes of dunes. And if you've been to Ballybunion, you know the importance of dunes. And I thought this was America's version of Ballybunion.
Mike, what were the challenges of zoning and permitting and red tape that you had to get through to get this project off the ground in the first place?
It took over 4 years for us finally to get approval, and we got approval only because the site, as I said, was covered in gorse, and the green groups disliked gorse even more than golf. So the green group said, if you'll remove all the gorse, we'll approve your plan. That took 4 years to fashion, but it finally worked because of the gorse.
Mike, we had David McClay Kidd on the show on Monday. Why did you ultimately choose his vision for what Bandon Dunes could become?
Well, as you probably know, David had never done a golf course, so my hiring him to build a golf course was highly speculative. But he was going to be working with his dad, Jimmy Kidd, who was my age and who I did trust because he had been at McGrahanish for so many years. So I figured since there was no one obvious in the U.S., why not give it a try with David and Jimmy Kidd? And boy, did they come through.
They did, and the property continued to grow. I was there 10 years ago, Mike, and I was struck by the fact that the clubhouse wasn't on the beautiful side, the ocean, you know, with maybe a sunset view and dinner and all that, that you left that precious part of the property to the golf and had the clubhouse tucked back. What was the reasoning behind the location of the clubhouse and the flow of the property?
Well, initially, some of the experts in golf came and said, you've got to put the clubhouse right on the ocean. And it was David Kidd, God bless him, who said, now, if we put the clubhouse out on the ocean, where will the beer trucks go to drop off the beer? On the road to go in? And won't that take golf holes away? And I listened to this and said, you know, I'd much rather have good golf holes on what turned out to be Bandon Dunes 16 and 17 than a beer truck road. So it was David Kidd who said, you don't want to go out there and waste a golf property. You want to put the clubhouse back here at half a mile, which we did. Thank you, David Kidd.
Mike, when you think back to 25 years ago, what do you remember opening day being like, and how do you think that set the tone for the rest of the year?
It started off raining and drizzling, just as you'd expect in Oregon, but by 10 a.m., with most of the rounds still ahead of us, the rain stopped. So as an omen, the stoppage of the rain sort of juxtaposed against the number of rounds we thought we would do and actually did do, which was we thought we'd do 10,000 rounds. We actually did 25,000 rounds. Boy, was that acceptance or what?
What's been your biggest surprise about Bandon Dunes over the past quarter century?
The very fact that people come from all over the world to play Bandon Dunes, given where Bandon is, which is 12 hours from San Francisco, 4.5 hours from Portland, it really is in the middle of nowhere. So to think that we do 260,000 rounds a year with people from all over the world is, to me, still astonishing.
Mike, how do you think Bandon Dunes and what Bandon Dunes has become has shaped your ideology for how you develop courses in the U.S.?
I think the old model of build golf to sell lots is, it's not that that's obsolete now, but I think Bandon Dunes proves that you can make it with golf alone, and boy, is it more naturally spectacular if you have no houses, which we don't here with five courses at Bandon Dunes. You don't see a house, you only see the lodge, and that's from a half a mile away.
Mike, I'm struck by the entirety of the experience, having been there 10 years ago, the wonderful caddies, the hospitality, the food, the lodging, the clubhouse, the golf, everything just seems to work. But from your perspective, is there anything you would have done differently in retrospect?
Honestly, no. What you mentioned, the people, and that I get more compliments on the people and the staff and the great touch they have with guests. I get more compliments about the people here than with golf, and I think that's the very special thing about Bandon Dunes and something that other resorts could emulate.
I was just going to ask you, Mike, what lessons do you think other clubs, other courses, other resorts can take from Bandon Dunes as we move forward into the future?
Let's start with the things that cause raised eyebrows on the part of experts in the business, starting with walking only. I thought that was worth the stab because the attempt, because both Bandon Dunes and Ballybunion are walking only. You can get a cart, but you've got to have a doctor's excuse. And I thought the same thing should apply here as in Scotland and Ireland. And having a caddy program, everyone was skeptical that we would get enough caddies. Well, we now have 550 caddies who do very well. Thank you very much. And those two, great employees, great caddies, are what most guests notice and come back to see again and again.
Mike, I know it's a big celebration this week out at Bandon. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you so much for your incredible contributions to the game of golf.
Happy to be here. Thank you for taking the time.
He is Mike Kaiser as Bandon Dunes celebrates 25 years. He called it Dream Golf. His dream changed the landscape of American golf forever.
Continuing right along on golf today, 13-time PGA Tour winner Jason Day snapped a winless streak of 105 starts with his victory at last year's CJ Cup Byron Nelson. Day, who won his maiden tour victory at the tournament in 2010, in the seventh player in tournament history with multiple titles. He talked to Rex earlier today.
You talked last year after this victory about how emotional it was, winning for the first time in 5 years on the PGA Tour. You've accomplished so much in your career. What does this victory rank?
Oh, that's a funny one to put on the spot. I think, well, I mean, it's got to be up there just because of the injury that I had, losing a bunch of confidence on the golf course, not knowing kind of, you know, do I want to kind of push through all the pain again of like trying to climb a mountain and trying to win a tournament, just trying to find that resiliency, and the effort to kind of push through all that stuff can be difficult at times. And then finally going and having a five-year span of not winning, and then knowing that, because being at number one in the world, I've been there before, and then kind of seeing where I was difficult. I mean, it's a kind of a gut punch to the ego, but to kind of be humbled and then kind of find the game again and find more so the love and the passion for the game, was nice to be able to work through all the health issues and then find the confidence back in the game again and win.
When you go back to last year, almost perfect for the week, certainly the final round 62 was perfect. How close is your game now to where you were at this point last year?
It's funny, golf is a weird game. Like I feel like, you know, I got off to a good start this year, and then just I didn't feel like great with the irons. I just felt like something was off, and I knew something was off. I would hit a shot and I'm like, that went near the pin, but I got lucky. You know what I mean? So it's just strange. Like one little thing, like I played RBC and I had a really good final round there, and I felt like I just kind of turned the corner with some of this iron play coming into the greens. I actually felt really good out there. And that was, it had been like a couple months of like kind of struggling through the iron play and not kind of knowing what was happening there.
Just a reminder, Jason Day gets his first round underway tomorrow at 8:45 a.m. Eastern time with hometown hero Jordan Spieth and Sungjae Im, who's fresh off a win in Korea. More golf today after this short break.
back on Golf Today. Two names continue to dominate the game in 2024, Nelly Korda and Scottie Scheffler. World number ones combining for 9 wins this year, as Ferris Bueller might say, 9 times. Nelly, of course, on a run of 5 straight, doing the Chevron, while Scheffler has picked up key wins at the Players, Masters, and 2 signature events. Now, both tailor-made players, as noted on social media, 2 world number ones, 2 runs for the ages. It's not often you get to witness greatness in real time, but we are lucky enough to be doing just that. And how about this? Earlier today, Tiger asked about the Dominators while visiting with Carson Daly on the Today Show.
Scottie Scheffler, Nelly Korda, yeah. We're seeing something real special right now. 9 out of the last 10 events, they have won. What do you see when you see Scottie playing in particular?
Well, for Scottie, I think that obviously his iconic foot movement is belies what the club is actually doing, you know, through the golf ball, how good it is,
right.
You know, how stable it is, how solid he hits it. You just stand back and just watch ball flight. You know, there's something different about his. It's just so consistent, and he works it both ways.
Yeah,
he goes both ways, and it's just a matter of if he putts, you know, decent, you know, he's going to win. If he putts great, he blows away fields. If he has a bad putting week, he contends.
Right.
So he's just that good a ball striker.
And we are joined now by David Abele, CEO and President, TaylorMade. Great to see you. We'll get to Tiger in just a bit. And David, I can make the argument we haven't seen a run like this concurrently on the PGA Tour and LPGA since Tiger in Annika. What's the buzz like around TaylorMade with what Scottie and Nelly have been doing?
Thanks, Damon. Good to see you both today, Ryan. It's been incredible, as you might imagine, right? We're golf fans that happen to be fortunate enough to be working for a great golf company, and to see our athletes perform on the world's greatest stages and win with the frequency that they have has been incredibly special for us all, right? We cheer for our athletes every weekend. We're on edge on Sunday afternoon as they're coming down the stretch in the final holes, and to see our new products like QI10 and Spider Tour X and new golf ball TP5 and 5X. I sound like a pitch man, but I am. It's pretty special to see those products in play and winning. And to see Scottie win 4 of 5, to see Nelly win 5 in a row, to see Rory win this past weekend. I think by count, we're 11 of the last 12 PGA or LPGA events. And that's something very special. And I think Tiger's point's the right one. Doesn't happen very often. And we're incredibly fortunate to see it happening right now in front of us.
David, on that point, how do you go about building a marketing campaign centered around these two superstars?
Yeah, great question. You know, we've always been a company that values the pyramid of influence in the construct of if the best players in the world perform at their best with our products, then that gives quite a bit of hope to all of us that don't play at that level. And certainly, Scottie and Nelly are validating the high-performance qualities of the products that we make. We're very proud of that, as we are of the balance of the TaylorMade team. So it's wonderful to be able to tell those stories about equipment changes or equipment improvements or performance improvements as these incredible athletes demonstrate the highest levels of performance in the game. So from that, we build storylines and we talk about the advantage of these products. But I think what's important, and I think most of our customers know this that play the game and play TaylorMade, is that the design technologies that are inherent in the products of the world's best players are the technologies that we bring down to service players of all skill levels and all abilities. And, you know, so the mission of our company is to be the best performance golf brand in the world, but who we serve are golfers of all skill levels. So fortunately, the correlation between what happens on tour and how we bring those technologies to market enables us to have a real great marketing platform to advance performance and enhance the way we all play.
David, Scottie and Nelly are obviously incredible talents, but they're also very similar personality-wise in that they're not very self-promotional. In your opinion, how much do you think it's incumbent upon the sponsors and their respective tours to elevate them in a way that maybe they're not comfortable doing themselves?
It's an interesting question. You know, I can give a perspective through my lens, certainly at TaylorMade. When we sign athletes and we work with professional athletes, there are a few things that we look at. Certainly their playing capabilities and their skill set. But most importantly is their value orientation. Who are they as human beings? Do we represent similar values from our company, our brands, and certainly the athletes themselves? And when those things come together, the partnership tends to flourish. quite frankly, our goal has never been to change the value orientation of any of our players. Our goal is to work with our players in a very productive way to enhance their playing ability and then ultimately build their brands in a way that's authentic to them, that's meaningful for them, and that is, quite frankly, genuine to them. And if it's genuine to them, it's relatable to golfers. So, you know, I look at Scottie Scheffler and Nelly Korda in current terms. Everything that you see and how they act and interact in live form when they're playing or even in post-game press conferences, that's exactly what we see and experience when we're together with them. I was fortunate to walk 36 holes playing AT&T with Scottie earlier this year. It was a wonderful, wonderful experience for me to get to know him even more deeply than I do through our relationship with TaylorMade. And I can tell you, Scottie is the same individual that you see behind the microphone as he is when you're playing golf with him, as he is at home with his family. And their values are consistent with how we view our company. Family-oriented, very authentic to the game, true to our core, and ultimately performance-driven. So when those values line up, we don't ask of our players to be anything but themselves.
David, it's interesting. When I wrote for the New York Times, author friends would tell me the importance of a launch day or when that book first hits the bookshelf. Today, of course, the launch of Tiger's son, Day Red. He's had a lot of campaigns around him throughout his career. How significant is this day and the hours and days to follow?
Thanks, Damon. You know, we call days like this at TaylorMade these moments in time where you wish you could capture the energy and all the anticipation of something new and fresh coming to the world of golf, and then replicate that literally every hour and every day and every month and year moving forward. And that's what we try to do. The last 24 hours have been incredibly special for our company as we bring and launch an entirely new brand of apparel and footwear to the world of golf. Apparel first, followed by footwear as we work into subsequent years with Sunday Red. Just over the past 24 hours, I've been in New York City here with Tiger. He did some incredible work last night with Jimmy Fallon, was on the Today Show this morning. I've had my business media tour going at the same time in parallel, and it's been a wonderful opportunity to share what we're trying to do with Sunday Red, bringing a true athleisure brand to the world of golf, starting in golf and extending into lifestyle markets domestically and internationally for the future. And it's been amazing to see the response to the brand so far, to see the activity on SundayRed.com. You know, we kind of had a goal, which is, can we break the internet with the launch of Sunday Red? And we didn't break the internet, but the website is hot right now. It's performing. Our inventory is selling through very quickly. We're replenishing as quickly as we can. But to see the influence of this brand and the aspirational nature of this brand, supported by our partner in Tiger in launching this brand, has been wonderful. So this moment in time, this day, is a special day for us. It's a special day for our customers that are buying Sunday Red. And our goal has always been, if we can create value for our customers and do that with unconditional certainty and commitment in the products that we make and the services that we offer, everything will work well in our business over time. And I think we're off to a good start.
David, why do you think that the Sunday brand is made for the future, even if your partner in Tiger Woods is 48 and his competitive days may be dwindling a little bit?
Yeah, the genesis behind this brand is not to build a traditional golf brand. Certainly, we're going to start with products that perform for arguably the greatest athlete in the history of our sport. In my opinion, the greatest player that's ever played our sport. And we hope that Tiger will continue to play as frequently as he can. And so the starting point is we're going to have products that Tiger can wear and perform at his best, that all of us as amateur golfers can wear and perform at our best on our Saturday and Sunday game. But what's uniquely different about this brand is in every form from the inception of this brand, it's not just a golf brand. The products that we're selling on the website, the products, even one that I'm wearing right now, this is a 3D knit cashmere sweater. Underneath it, I have our Delta Polo. I'll wear these products out to dinner. I'll wear them to my kids' golf tournaments or soccer games. I'll wear them, maybe not cashmere to the beach, but we have hoodies that I'll work out in. So in every essence of Sunday Red, it starts in golf, but extends into active lifestyle. And we believe that those markets are growing and growing very quickly. And now is a great time for us to enter them. And so we couldn't be more thrilled about what the future of this brand is while Tiger plays, building upon his legacy in his future, and even shows up to some degree in the nature of the logo. The Tiger logo, if you look at it very closely, maybe you gents have, has 15 stripes. Those 15 stripes are synonymous with his 15 major championships. The inside kind of golf or inside baseball story about that is when we brought this logo to life with Tiger and we determined whether or not this was the right pathway, says, what are you guys going to do when I win my 16th, to show you where his mindset is, which was a lot of fun. There's the logo on the screen right now, which means we might have to replicate or change the logo to 16 stripes. But in the end, it's a modern brand. It's focused on golf first. It extends into lifestyle. You'll see more lifestyle products coming from Sunday Red in both apparel and footwear as we move forward and continue to build this brand over time. And I couldn't be more thrilled with how it's positioned to serve the needs of golfers and lifestyle enthusiasts around the world.
Indeed, Tiger joking with Carson Daly. He was ready to ruin the logo at some point. Hey, David, I know it's a busy day for you and a big day. Enjoy the beautiful day in New York City, and thanks for hopping on.
Yeah, thank you both. It's wonderful to be with you as always. Thanks for all you do for the game and giving us a chance to talk a little bit about Sunday Red. Appreciate it very much.
He is David Abeles of TaylorMade. Still to come, another guy coming back from injury. Incredible story. PGA Tour champions Bernhard Langer makes his return to the senior circuit just 3 months after tearing his Achilles while playing pickleball. More on his story when Golf Today returns.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Back on Golf Today and back on April 2nd, World Golf Hall of Fame member Bernhard Langer, age 66, took to Instagram after tearing his Achilles on February 1st, playing pickleball. Say, I'm back. Pitching, chipping, putting. Is there anything better for a golfer? The shoes need to improve, though, Lav.
This was 2 months after he was chipping and pitching before heading to Augusta, of course, to not play in the Masters, but the 66-year-old said that he aimed to return to competitive golf within the next 2 months. Well, Damon, surprise, surprise, he is back somehow. You see the eye back there. Very MJ-esque. Expected to make his return to competition at this week's Insperity Invitational tournament that Bernhard Langer has won 4 times, who's quoted as saying he was encouraged by Aaron Rodgers' recovery. Fortunately for Langer, he does not have any edge rushers trying to track him down.
One of the toughest to ever do it. And joining Golf Central later this evening. Do not change that channel. We're back on Golf Today. Reminder, first round coverage of the CJ Cup. Byron Nelson begins tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern time. And as you can see, weather looking a little stormy over the next 4 days.
One of the more cliched questions we get to ask tour players all the time is, what would you do if you weren't playing on the PGA Tour? And most of those answers aren't very good. But you, Ben Griffin, have a very interesting answer. What would you be doing if you weren't really, really good at golf?
Is it the answer that you want? Well, so it's funny. I've joked with Todd Lewis before on Golf Channel about how we both kind of have minors in meteorology. I minored in geography with a focus in meteorology. So I have that as backup if I need it. I was a mortgage banker in a previous life 3 years ago. So I've done a little bit of everything. My main major is econ, but I guess I could be a meteorologist if I need to be.
We got in this conversation at Pebble Beach a few weeks ago. We all know what the weather was like there, and you were talking folks through atmospheric rivers and everything we were dealing with that week. During a rain delay, are you the guy in the locker room that's talking everybody through exactly what's happening?
Yeah, I definitely could be a resource to guys if they have questions about weather. No doubt, I think weather is so important in our sport, and it changes every day, and it affects how we play. I mean, wind direction changes a golf course completely. We see that every week. But yeah, during a rain delay, I mean, I pretty much know what's going on with weather systems and stuff. I can kind of look at a map and figure out what the deal is. And it looks like for tomorrow, maybe even, there could be a squall line or something coming through, which is going to produce some heavy thunderstorms. And so it could be pretty unstable up there in the atmosphere. We might have to watch out. And maybe there might be a delay tomorrow.
There it is, squall line. I was looking for it. I'm going to put you on the spot. There's tomorrow's weather forecast. And we're going to do just a weather on the winds thing.
Yeah, I don't know what the lowest level of a chief meteorologist is, but I'm probably like below an analyst right now. Anyways, we have changing winds throughout the day, so obviously there's a lot going on up there in the sky. Chance of storms all day. I mean, yeah, as I mentioned, a squall line. So when you see a squall line on a map, it's basically a it's like a strip of dangerous weather. It's a big, it's not necessarily like a normal cell you'll see where it kind of goes over an area. It's like a strip. When you have these strips of squall lines, they're very, there's a lot of pressure, a lot of unstable kind of air conditions. You more or less have, let me think, if warm air always rises. And so basically what's going on in the atmosphere, it's cooler, but they have warm air that's trying to rise and it's causing instability. And when you have these squall lines, they're capable of like some of the most dangerous storms, tornadoes, everything, high winds, gusty winds. So that's why we're going to see gusty winds tomorrow. It talks about it getting breezy kind of throughout the day. So it could be dangerous. We'll just see if we get lucky and it misses us. But typically squall lines, I mean, they kind of, in the U.S. with westerly winds, they're going to go towards the east. And so they have a good chance of hitting us pretty much. If there's a strip of storms like this traveling east, it's going to basically hit the entire state or whatever and just kind of go across. So we'll see what happens. Hopefully my 7 a.m. tee time, I get to avoid some of it, but never know.
We fell short. We should have gotten you a green screen to do the complete squall line as it came through. Next time we'll be ready, and let's hope this forecast is wrong.
If someone had the sound down, it looked like Ben Griffin was doing like backswing advice, but he gave a pretty darn good weather report. Did you understand any of that?
Unfortunately, I did, because I've always been fascinated with weather. And a funny story, spring semester, you're trying to take like a cake elective, right?
Yes.
Just get to graduation. So I took Intro to Meteorology.
Okay.
And it was brutal. There was so much science involved. I was hanging on for dear life just to get a C in that class. And so I've kind of like resigned myself now to being like an amateur storm chaser.
Okay.
Anytime there's a hurricane bearing down in Northeast Florida, I'm always outside with my 5-year-old trying to chase it. I think a more interesting video, and Ben was obviously great there, we should have gone back to Rex Hoggard and gotten his thoughts on a potential Tuesday finish and what he thinks about sticking around a little bit extra.
That's a great point. How about Todd Lewis? I didn't know that he took meteorology. It explains that we both do reporting at the Masters, like along First Fairway. I'm always a little uncomfortable when I'm saying the wind's out of the west, southwest. And T. Lou always aces that segment. He's very comfortable doing the hour by hour.
T. Lou, Burko's got like his own modeling system. I can see him with like his monitors all queued up. The guys love it here at Golf Channel.
Hopefully the weather is sunny and terrific for the final day of the PGA Professional Championship in Frisco, Texas.